Episode of the Pocket Protectors podcast. My name is Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at Brown Jason. Joined this evening by our friend, the doctor, Eric Eager. What's going on, my man?
Man, this is the second straight podcast where somebody's invoked the PhD on me. It's like the bar has been raised. I'm doing okay. Just not a bad week. But, you know, Gus gets them another win and the NFC North is basically the Vikings for the taking. You can't complain.
Yeah, gotta love it. Gotta love it. And you gotta blame George for that, because George put it out there on Twitter. Can't remember. He said something snarky to you and referred to you as doctor while doing it. And I was like, that's perfect. So it's his fault.
Snarky, that's for sure.
I feel like every podcast needs at least one person who has a nickname like the doctor.
Yeah, it's true. And at least Eric earned his. So Luke, how are things, man? What's going on with you?
Doing good. Still riding that high of beating the Packers.
And that is always a beautiful thing. So, Luke, I'll start with you, man. What are your thoughts on the game? What did you pull away from it?
I can't stop thinking about how much the NFL changes with Aaron Rodgers being out for a significant time. Like, that feels like it's just this earthquake in all of the NFL, which, you know, and we'll talk more about, like, QB value and stuff later in the show, but otherwise, it just feels like we're in such a good position, you know, looking at two really winnable games to go into a midseason bye at 6-2 and then all this weird quarterback stuff. That's not a game that I thought that we would win, so I feel very happy.
Yeah, gotta love it. Gotta take that. And Eric, what are your thoughts? First, I guess as a fan, you know, just watching the game as it was going on, and then, you know, taking a step back with a little bit of time away from the game now in terms of, you know, what really happened out there and really, like, your analysis of how the team looked and played and all those things and what it means for going forward.
Yeah, I think you have to be really encouraged with the fact that the Vikings could win a game when their backup quarterback didn't play very well. I know Keenum I was watching the game. I was also watching a few others and I was just like, gosh, Keenum's kind of in some ways keeping them in the game with this interception they threw, the McKinnon fumble and everything. And yet, you know, the defense kind of has done exactly what they've been, you know, supposed to do the last 2 weeks, which is to, you know, put a rookie quarterback sort of in his place. And then once Aaron Rodgers went down, to kind of make sure that they gave Brett Hundley almost nothing. You know, there's a couple drives there at the end of the first half that it got you a little worried. But yeah, I mean, it's very encouraging for the Vikings. I think you look at Xavier Rhodes is just playing outside of his mind right now. Trey Waynes is somebody who I think, you know, over the first few weeks we looked at his, like, sort of run stop percentages and all that and sort of scoffed at him, but it does appear to be kind of a real thing where Trey Waynes has really sort of found a comfortability level on the outside, making plays, making tackles, and even intercepting passes here and there. So and Harrison Smith, I think Matthew Caller, like, DM'd me on Twitter and said, yeah, this is the best player I've ever covered in any sport. So that's a pretty, like, high, you know, high praise. And he's, you know, a guy who's just out there. He got sacks on two of his three pass rushes. He got an interception three of the last four games. I mean, he is something else. So, you know, and as you alluded to, we only have a few weeks until we get to ask the Teddy questions without a whole lot of disingenuity.
And yeah, it's nuts. It's funny though. And it's funny, but it's also kind of sad because, you know, and we've talked about it already in terms of, you know, Sam and him going down and kind of how depressing it was to watch all of that with him trying to go through the motions of playing. But it's also just shows you kind of how cold the NFL is, because it's almost like, yeah, Zimmer had to answer a few questions here or there, but I mean, they seem to be moving on. And that's, I kind of get the feeling that we've likely seen the last that we're going to see of Sam, you know, like, even when he's been rehabbing, like, throughout the whole process, Teddy's been on the sideline all the time. He's very visible around the team. And Sam is just kind of, you know, he's off somewhere trying to get treatment, but we don't really know what's going on and if he's going to be back. And, you know, Teddy's back at practice tomorrow. He's doing the QB press conference on Thursday, and we're just kind of rolling forward from there. So, yeah, it's a cold world, but I wouldn't be surprised if at sometime in the not too distant future we see that flash on the timeline that Sam's going on IR, and that ends the that experiment with bringing in our most recent kind of mercenary quarterback to try to lead us to the promised land. But as you both have kind of hinted at there, kind of talking about quarterbacks, that was one thing that, you know, given the Aaron Rodgers injury and how huge obviously that is for the NFL. And then the thing that really, I guess, got my attention was the fact that the Aaron Rodgers injury moved the betting line on the New Orleans Green Bay game by 13. And so I kind of wanted to get you guys both in here and have a quick conversation about, you know, what is actually the value of a quarterback? You know, we hear people talk about it being the most important position in sports all the time. And we all know that, you know, good quarterback play is vital to being a sustainable winning franchise. But, you know, that 13-point swing got me thinking about it. And who better than the two of you to really come in here and have the conversation about what is the value of a guy like Aaron Rodgers to your team in terms of wins? So, Eric, I know that you talked a bit about it when we were going over expected points, but I know you've also done some other work for PFF. So I'll kick it to you to start in terms of, you know, how we really figure out what the value is and you know, what these quarterbacks actually do mean to their teams in the big picture.
Yeah, obviously, like quarterback, you know, the aspect of the game that throws the ball or defends the pass is clearly the most important thing. But it's interesting. So I've done this like wins above replacement measure to try to like actually put a value to it. And it's hard to talk about a replacement level player, but assuming, you know, Brett Hundley is just, you know, a guy that, you know, you can kind of think about as somebody you could sign off the street. Aaron Rodgers is worth something like four and a half wins to the Packers last season. So you put that in perspective, a win is about, you know, is about 30 to 40 points. Okay. So over the course of a season, you know, you're talking about, you know, 35 times 4.5, you know, so that's, you know, that's quite a few points. So that's like 157.5 points, right? So you divide that by 16, that's about a 10-point swing, you know, over the course of a game. From going from Aaron Rodgers to a guy like Brett Hundley, and those are all kind of like back of the envelope calculations. But if you think about that, okay, so the look ahead line and the New England or the New Orleans, you know, Green Bay game, what was that? Something like Green Bay -7 or something, right?
Yep.
And then you look at, so New Orleans opens a can on Detroit, right? That clearly, that's another aspect of it, right? But then Green Bay not only loses to the Vikings, but I think also, you know, part of the issue with the wins above replacement is that all these things are interconnected. I would guess that Rodgers is probably worth even more than the 4.5 wins that we have him at, just because you look and like that defense kind of shows itself as being like very, very suspect when it can't like pin its ears back and know that, okay, we're gonna send a blitz here because we know if we get crushed on a you know touchdown throw that our quarterback's just gonna come back and get it, right? It's got to be a lot more like the Vikings defense last season, which is quite good, but they have to play, they kind of have to press a little bit because they know that Sam's not going to get them 16 points, you know? And it's a different mentality too. And we saw it a little bit in 2013 with the Packers when Rodgers went out, their defense, like, you know, gave up like 30 points a game or something like that during that stretch. So I think, you know, Rodgers is totally worth 10 points in a spread like that. I would say any other position. So last season, Julio Jones, he was about 2.5 wins above replacement. Mike Evans was kind of similar. I'm trying to look at other positions. Antonio Brown, a little less than 2. Khalil Mack, a little less than 2. Guys like Vaughn Miller, about 1.5. But, you know, if you rush the passer, you cover receivers, you catch the ball, you can be about like a win above replacement, which over the course of a season is about 30 points, you know, that kind of thing. Quarterbacks are really the ones, you know, Tom Brady last season, we had him at like 6 wins above replacement, which is just pretty crazy. But like, obviously if Tom Brady goes down, you know, the Patriots are going to be like, you know, underdogs in those games too, if they replace him with somebody from the street. So yeah, I mean, it is reasonable that the line would move that much in a game like that.
And that's crazy. And I guess the next thing, because especially in the context of the team that we all follow, the Vikings, is, and I know that I think Luke wrote an article about, you know, us having the potentially best 1-2 punch in the league. And so you're looking at that. And so this year, you know, your starter goes down and you're in there with the backup quarterback, Case Keenum. And he had a bad game and he's fallen off in some of the measures, but he's still a top 7 quarterback in QBR. And so I guess when you're looking at that, how does that relationship work in terms of how important the quarterback is in that equation? And then when you're looking at the wide receivers and the tight ends and the running backs who are receiving the passes, how important are they in there? And how do you strike that balance between, I guess, the value at quarterback versus the weapons that you give them and building that offensive team that can be successful ultimately?
I think the way I look at it is with, like, supporting casts, they are, I guess I view them as kind of the constant that either gets elevated or kind of held back by quarterback talent. You know, you see like a guy like Aaron Rodgers is probably making Davante Adams better, look better than he actually is game in and game out because he's that good. And then you look at somebody like last year, I think of like DeAndre Hopkins being held back by Brock Osweiler all the time. So I guess with supporting casts, I like view it that way. And I think that's why it's also kind of, it's important to use stuff like to the best degree that we can use things like catch rate within a yard of separation, which is something that next gen stats can do, which can kind of adjust away the quarterback or at least look at a facet of play that isn't as dependent on quarterback play. You know, if you just look at like, okay, how good is he at contested catches? You know, those 50-50 balls are a lot more on the wide receiver once they've gotten there than they are on the quarterback. And that gives us a better way to like evaluate. And I guess it also, you know, we're going to see at the end of this season with the Packers, we're going to get a really good like control to look at exactly how much Aaron Rodgers was elevating that roster, because we're going to get a nice chunky sample of non-Aaron Rodgers Packers play.
That's a really good point, Dan. I guess, Eric, I know that's something that I've you know, messaged you once or twice in the past week, is like, how do you really look at that relationship when, you know, as Luke said, you have an Aaron Rodgers who, as you already pointed out, worth many wins above replacement, you know, arguably the greatest quarterback in the league, if not all times by some people's measures. How do you figure out where Aaron Rodgers kind of ends and the actual skill or efficiency of the wide receivers begins when he is making everyone on that offense seem so much so good?
Yeah, I mean, I think the difficulty is, you know, there's only 32 quarterbacks that play at a time, and you have to, but I think over the course of, you know, a long stretch, you can kind of do that, especially if you have play-by-play data, you have grade data for wide receivers and quarterbacks. I think that's something we're trying to do at PFF, which is to say, you know, of all the plays where a quarterback got a positive grade and a receiver got a positive grade, you know, like how do you divvy that up? Do you give this much to the quarterback, this much to the receiver, those sorts of things. On a like Luke said, a 50-50 ball, that's, you know, that's one of those things where you got to actually ask yourself, like, does the quarterback, I think to back to like Josh Doctson's touchdown catch against the Raiders, maybe on that Sunday Night Football game a few weeks ago, is that actually a really good play that Cousins made, or did he just throw a ball and did the receiver do, you know, take a 10% play and make it into 100% play? I think all of those things are, you know, have to go into the calculation. I think in a broad sense, what you could do is simply control all your wide receiver grades and all your wide receiver stats for quarterback play, and control all of your quarterback play for supporting casts. I think that gets you some of the way there. But I think on a play-by-play basis, that's probably the best way to go. As Luke said, you can talk about separation. You can talk about accuracy. I think accuracy is a big deal. Like, for example, if you throw a ball on a guy's back shoulder on a slant and he's still able to get 10 yards after, you know, after the catch, on a play that the average receiver gets 3 yards after the catch, well, obviously your receiver, you know, benefited you there more than, you know, the quarterback did. All those things, I think, and we're kind of trending in that direction in terms of getting data that is more grainy and can give us more in that direction. So that's good.
And kind of also in that regard, because one of the things that, you know, I heard a lot, you know, over the course of last season that I found frustrating was, you know, the Cowboys were so good last year because they drafted Zeke Elliott, you know, fourth overall, when, you know, in my view, really the thing that changed for the Cowboys that they actually had very good, you know, borderline exceptional level quarterback play, because they also added, you know, Dak Prescott to the equation. So with something like that, if you were to make a case for the importance of Dak Prescott for the Cowboys last year, how is it that you would go ahead and kind of parse out the fact that, you know, he was the thing that changed their offense more so than Zeke coming in and rushing for all those yards?
I think wins above replacement would do that at the aggregate level, certainly. Just, you know, you would go and say, you know, what does a positive grade mean for a quarterback in the passing game versus a positive grade for a running back in the run game mean? And that's kind of how you can look back. So, and I have to look at these numbers again, because that would help the context here. So let me, you know, look at where Zeke's at in terms of wins above replacement. Yeah, so we had him at somewhere around 2/3 of a win above replacement, you know, playing as one of the better running backs in the league. And you look at a guy like Dak, he's about 2.5 wins above replacement. So you look at that and you think, Jason's absolutely correct. It's a player who is in the passing game making these sort of like high level and high leverage plays versus a guy running the football, you know, not only kind of more of a replaceable position, right, that goes into it, but also doing something that doesn't benefit his team pretty well.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. And I'm sorry, Luke, go ahead, man.
All good. That just goes up to just like the intrinsic value of quarterbacks. And like that's a really good illustration of like, because like Zeke among all running backs probably ranks higher than Dak does among all quarterbacks by a pretty significant margin. And yet Zeke is only able, you know, despite the electric rookie season he had and all the stuff we saw him do in the highlight plays, and everybody's familiar with how good he was only able to offer, two-thirds of a win above replacement. Whereas Dak, who played well, but not nearly that like electrifyingly well for a rookie, you know, was able to produce 2.5 wins above replacement just because that's his position, and his position is that much more important. I think that's a really good illustration of like the proportion.
And something you just said there, I don't know, it reminded me, I guess, of something Luke said before we actually started recording. And just, I wanted to bring this back to the Vikings for just a second, just because it popped in my head. I wanted to get both of your opinions, because even though kind of the aggregate level stats for the Vikings offense in particular look still very, very good, when do we start to feel the impact, I guess you guys think, and I'll start with you, Luke, here, of, you know, our success rate dropping off as significantly as it has in the running game without Dalvin, and, you know, Case Keenum, he is high variance, he played not a very good game against Green Bay. They weren't able to take advantage, but, you know, we are playing a better defense this coming week in Baltimore. I guess, when do you guys think that, you know, some of those things that maybe haven't caught up in the aggregate level stats start to show themselves in the results for the Minnesota Vikings?
Yeah, well, part of it is like we're taking, you know, the last 6 weeks of games, and we've had Dalvin for 3.5 of that. So having Dalvin cook for that much, and he had a success rate that was crazy. It was like 54% or something. That's really good. And eventually that's just going to continue to get watered down. And see, you know, the drop-off happens immediately, right? We just start playing worse. But when we look at aggregate stats and we rank, you know, 5th in this or 15th in that, it's going to start to just, like, fall slowly and slowly. Success rates with McKinnon and Murray, which is, I think it's, like, in the 30s, 33 or something. I don't have it in front of me. But, like, it's a pretty steep drop-off in success rate. And as we have more games of the low success rate, it'll start to, you know, water down the better games. And you'll just kind of see Vikings offensive rankings, like, slowly taper off. That's not to say that it's, like, suddenly they'll be bad, because I think In terms of yards above expectations, is something I was just listening to Arif talk about this on Norse Code. Yards above expectation, which is like taking the average run at every down and distance, you know, second and seven, second and six, third and six, all that, and then measuring runs against that. I think both Murray and McKinnon have been above average in that stat, and I think that's a good indicator of, you know, the run game still being like functional. But it'll definitely, as you know, more poor offensive performances, especially if Case has to stay in for a while, you know, and if Teddy doesn't come back right away, or, you know, we need to wait for a few more weeks for him. You know, I think Case Keenum is going to continue to offer like inefficient performances, and all that stuff is just going to kind of tug down the better performances we saw earlier in the season.
And, Eric, I guess to maybe put you on the spot a little bit, because, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, I think everyone on this podcast is, you know, in the Team Teddy camp of things. But, you know, to date, you know, Teddy had been a relatively conservative passing quarterback. I guess when you think about us moving forward in this season, I guess what would need to change in terms of the profile? Because I remember you shared that awesome kind of data based on the you know, every throw from our quarterback graded out, and seeing the group that Teddy fell into there, I mean, it wasn't particularly inspiring in terms of like the long-term prospects or him being kind of an elite guy. So with him coming back now, and I know that, you know, many have already just anointed him as the, you know, the savior of the team, what would need to change in your view in terms of how he plays going forward for him really to have, you know, that impact and us really be able to take advantage of the solid team that Rick Spielman has built thus far?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the thing with Teddy is the fact that in 2015, they really kind of, they were inspired to do the 2007, you know, Peterson pass punt kind of offense. And a lot of the early downs, they were in heavier personnel. And not like the heavier personnel where you'd have like a Hunter Henry at tight end or something, you know, where it was a heavier personnel where your tight ends were not stretching the field, the Red Ellisons, the Kyle Rudolphs and everything. So I think part of Teddy's issue was simply the game plans. And you know, you have a good defense, you have a good running game, don't put your team in a bad position. The offensive line was quite bad both of the years that he played, started significant time for the Vikings. So that hurts. The wide receiver position was not nearly sort of what it is now with Adam Thielen sort of emerging as the second wide receiver and, Laquon Treadwell turning into, Jerry Rice on Sunday. So, he did. That was a fantastic catch by, tight end three. So he was
felt that tingle go down his
spine. I don't know. I think a lot more is in place for Bridgewater. I think Shurmur is going to do a better job. I wonder how much Shurmur is prepared to have Teddy be his quarterback, but I know that he was, Norv Turner always tried to make him into Phillip Rivers, where he kind of wasn't Phillip Rivers, that kind of thing. I like the potential with Teddy. I think there's a lot there. There's obviously an issue with the guy, you know, being in kind of the Bradford, Alex Smith, all that kind of thing cluster of quarterbacks or the conservatism. But there's also a thing about Teddy being a second year quarterback at the time, as opposed to Bradford being, you know, in the sixth, seventh, eighth year, kind of filling in that same conservative group. So, I don't know. There's a lot of unknown with Teddy. I'm willing to roll the dice whenever he's ready, just because the alternative is Case Keenum, who's a good backup but not a starter. So, I'm excited to see, you know, sort of how he evolves.
As am I. And from Case Keenum perspective, I guess if he was to continue, and I know you probably haven't done all the math at this point, but if he was to continue kind of the level of play that he's on right now, where would we end up in terms of him as like for a wins over replacement based on his current level of play?
Oh, if he's still PFF grade the way he's at, I'm thinking he's probably somewhere in the two thirds of a win to a win above replacement. Which again, that doesn't seem like a lot, but over the course of a 16 game year, when you have 22 starters, that's actually, not bad. And like, that's, yeah, I think I said this on Twitter the other day, Case Keenum he's played the role of a backup quarterback in the NFL superbly through five appearances. There is absolutely no doubt about that. And if you can tell me, you sign Case Keenum to a 2-year, a 2-year contract or $2 million or whatever he's signed to, and you get one win above replacement out of that, that is like, pretty much gold, right? So I have nothing but great things to say about Keenum, with the understanding that he is a backup. Like, I don't need to judge him like a start, just same way as Gus Frat in 2008. I'm not going to get mad because the second string quarterback doesn't turn into Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers when they put him as a starter. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, that definitely does make a lot of sense. And I think that was really all that I had for you guys tonight in terms of the questions about the quarterback and their value and kind of the longer term outlook for the league and for our team, I guess. Luke, I think that you dropped an article earlier today, I guess. Anything else going on? Or did you just want to pitch the one that you have that already dropped today?
I could talk a little bit about it. I wrote about the backups and their performances specifically in the Packers game, but I think like roster construction as a whole is worth discussing, because I think like it matters a lot when you get to the end of the season and half your team is hurt, and that kind of happens to a lot of teams, and suddenly you get wins because, my backups sucked less than your backups. And I think that it just it lends us to like an interesting philosophical discussion about like backups and depth and like the backup quarterback. How much do you spend on a backup quarterback? If we just talked about, for a whole podcast about how important the quarterback position is, how much do you spend on insurance for that? And I think we can learn a pretty good lesson about risk management and like risk analysis, where, okay, if a quarterback's worth, this many wins and we want to pay, this much of a contract to a quarterback worth that many wins, how much do we pay for like to hedge our bet against him, getting hurt or tearing an ACL or something? And I think the Vikings put more resources into backup quarterback for one. They paid Case versus the Packers, who have been chilling with a fifth round draft pick on their roster for 3 years. And then I think just better acquisitions in terms of like Anthony Harris, who's as an undrafted free agent, who's probably outplaying the label of an undrafted free agent. Somebody like Jeremiah Searles, who we've gotten a lot of equity out of, although I didn't love how he played on Sunday. In fact, he was kind of a disaster. And then somebody like Jerick McKinnon, being able to like provide equity in the event that we lose the superstar Dalvin Cook. And I think that just like having, risk management, having a little bit of resources devoted to the concept of insurance is really hard to justify in the off season. But it really, really, really comes in handy when disaster actually strikes.
That definitely makes some sense. So where can we find that piece?
It's up at purpleptsd.com. It's up on the front page for a little bit, or you can go find my author page.
Oh, we'll definitely, definitely check that out. And Eric, I guess, what do you have on deck this week?
Yep, we have the PFF ELO ratings coming out tomorrow. I think the Vikings are 12th now. They've been kind of climbing here and there. So that's pretty cool. These systems are sort of slow to adjust, obviously, to things like the Rodgers injury and everything. So that hopefully, as the Vikings, go to, win against Baltimore and Cleveland, hopefully that'll move them up a little bit. And then on Friday, we'll have the PFF spread picks. Last week was a rough week. I think whether it was the New England, New York Jets game not going over the total, or the, the Kansas City Chiefs not covering against Pittsburgh, actually getting kind of their butts kicked in that game.
Are you okay? Are you okay, Eric? I know that must have been tough.
I'm fine. You know, yeah, I mean, I probably get into the Chiefs games a little bit more than the Vikings games, only because the Vikings, you know, we sort of thought that Green Bay was going to win, so we always kind of want to be right a little bit too. But obviously, with Rodgers out, that kind of throws a wrench into everything. But yeah, I'm fine. I think the game Oakland versus Kansas City on Thursday night will be a nice one to sort of think about and try to handicap. But yeah, we had a rough week, but we're still doing okay. I'll be on the PFF podcast Friday morning as well, and then next week we'll hopefully talk about a better week in terms of the Vikings winning, the Chiefs winning, and more math problems that the NFL is going to give us.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Well, gentlemen, thank you once again for joining me this evening to talk about some football things from a bit of a different perspective. Yeah, that's all I got. Nothing really on deck for me. Anyone who's listening to this a couple days after this pod drops, the first episode of Miles and JR talking draft prospects will be coming. Yeah, that's really all I got for you guys. Thank you for once again coming on and chopping it up with me, and have a good night.
Take care.
All right, you guys, talk to you soon.